Good evening. Welcome to the Soleri Report. Today is December 11th, 2014. I'm Catherine Alston Fitz. I'm delighted you could join me this evening. It's Christmas, one of my favorite times of the year, and we have our 2014 Christmas card and our description of our great donations this year. Check it out on the blog. And we also have Give the Gift of the Soleri Report, and you can learn more about that on the blog as well. We invite every subscriber to send the name and information for someone that you would like to give a two-month gift of the Soleri Report. That includes the January wrap-up. It's a great introduction to the Soleri Report, and I think it will, you know, whether it's a framework for helping you navigate the year or investment strategy, it's just great background, great overview to go into 2015 with. Well, our theme tonight is, will the Feds yank the interest rate leash, playing the east-west pendulum? I wrote in the blog post for the Soleri Report this evening about the rebalancing between east and west. It's something we've talked a lot about this year. I've encouraged you to both listen to my interview with Steve Roche and read his book Unbalanced, which is a great overview for the part of that involving China and the United States, which, of course, is the very big piece. The latest development, we have the next Fed meeting coming up in 5 days, December 16th and 17th, and they're starting to indicate that they are going to change what they're saying about interest rates, clear signal that they may raise them even sooner than middle next year, which is what sort of the official, unofficial party line has been. I assure you the guys, the breakaways who shifted $40 trillion out are going to have a buying party if you shift interest rates out. There's a great article that I put up on the blog from Ambrose Pritchard, Dollar Surge Endangers Global Debt Edifice, warns BIS. Basically what they're saying is the same thing we've been talking about on the Soleri Report for weeks now. As the Fed no longer prints dollars at the speed that they were doing during quantitative easing, liquidity gets pulled in. If they raised interest rates, it gets pulled in even more. The cheap dollars that have been floating around encouraging people to borrow money in dollars, suddenly now you've got to pay it back in dollars, which are much harder to get, pay interest in dollars. And of course, everybody except the U.S. has to earn dollars. They can't just print them. And so you start to get dollar shortages and dollars get a little bit tighter, and you threaten to raise interest rates and you're pulling that leash. And that means the power of the breakaways, money, and those who control the U.S. federal credit mechanism are going to have a lot more power. That power is going to rise. And that's what I've been talking about if, in case we get into a scenario with a much higher dollar. It's one of the things Franklin and I talk about today in the Precious Metals Market Report. Also, it's very interesting. Over the last 4 to 6 weeks, we've seen Yellen remarkably disappear from the press, and we have Vice Chairman Stanley Fischer out, literally acting like he's the chairman of the Federal Reserve. I talked about this when Yellen first went in and the danger that this would happen. Fischer's much more the kind of person that Wall Street would want. But he's an Israeli citizen. He's a former governor of the Israeli Central Bank. You can imagine why they didn't want to nominate him for chairman. But Fischer's much more of a hawk in his prominence in the news and out and about on the sort of Wall Street financial circles is very noticeable. So it's going to be interesting to see where that goes. But the whole message, of course, and I think the thing to watch is watch what the Fed's saying and watch what happens to the U.S. dollar, because if they even threaten to yank that leash, it's going to mean more power into the networks that control the federal credit mechanism, can print those dollars, and of course are sitting on the $40 trillion. Money in markets, the Congress and White House as we speak now are negotiating over a deal to finalize a budget. We went through the elections without a budget. You know, the budget's supposed to be final on October 1st. Clearly, for political reasons, that was hard to do before the midterm elections. But they're still squabbling, and if they don't agree by tonight, we're going to have a government shutdown at midnight. If you want to understand why it's so difficult at this point to re-engineer the budget and the fiscal affairs of the country, I would really encourage you to read the article I wrote 2 years ago in anticipation of this coming clean over the fiscal cliff. It's a really excellent overview of all the sort of things that need to be teed up and dealt with if we're really going to re-engineer the federal budget. And of course, trying to bring transparency to the black budget as an official matter is very difficult. Well, oil's down 40% year to date. They're big winner and losers. The big losers, of course, are OPEC and Russia. I would say that that is very much a plan, not to say that the slowdown in the global economy can't contribute, but I see this very much as an oil card game. It's very interesting. As I said last week, we had Jim Norman talking about the oil card. Great interview. You should listen to it on the Solera report. And he warned that oil could go as low as $40. Then, of course, the following week or a week later, we had everybody on sort of Yahoo and Bloomberg saying, oh, well, it could go down to 40. And I keep saying you heard it here first. We see the price break $60. It closed at $59.25 today, or was trading at $59.25 at the close. So in theory, we could go lower, but it wouldn't surprise me to ultimately to see it stabilize around here. I think there's a real effort to deliver a message as to who's boss to both OPEC and Russia. And again, I think it's going to be a long, hard winter over in the Ukraine. We see announcements that the Ukraine needs extraordinary billions of dollars to not have a financial implosion. It's going to be very interesting to see what the IMF does. Merkel surprised everyone in the last week, announcing that it was unacceptable to the Germans that the Russians hold Crimea, and so the Germans are holding fast. So it'll be very interesting to see how this plays out, because the Russians are clearly digging in for a long fight and have no intention of giving up Crimea. So we'll see how long it takes for the lower oil price to deliver real pain. Court of Appeals reached a decision in an insider trading case. It's no longer insider trading if the person who gave you the tip was not engaged in a legal violation, including of their fiduciary obligation. So this is going to make it very interesting for the rumor mill to operate. So another little contribution to the potential crash-up possibilities in the equity markets. CIA, the Senate Intelligence Committee, Dianne Feinstein comes out with a report on the CIA torture program. I hate to say it. We have Glenn Greenwald jumping all over it. And it's amazing, you know, because we have reporters who within 24 hours are shut down, and yet Greenwald is free to whack the NSA through the Guardian and now whack the CIA over the torture program. And what you realize, what it looks to me like, is Global 3.0 is whacking 2.0 plenty. We have Dick Cheney aggressively on the TV saying that the Senate report is crap and defending the torture program. Clearly, it's a pretty gruesome thing to have happen if you're the CIA and you've been asked to do these things. Having this report come out from the Senate is really going to tie the hands of officers and agents on the line. I'm not defending the use of torture, but I will say this, that anybody who wants the empire to keep going, this is, you know, these are the kind of things that happen within an empire. So it's part of the model, and it's a big problem for the United States, because the United States has always enjoyed a brand of credibility that it is lost, and this means there's even more dependency on force. So if you're dependent on force, but you tie the hands of the people who deliver the force, whether the NSA or the CIA, you're clearly weakening the whole bureaucracy. And so as we've expected, the institutions of 2.0 are in one sense fighting a losing battle. We had a series of decisions in the Madoff case. I won't bore you with the details, but essentially the Madoff trustee has lost an appeal on clawbacks. Essentially, the judge said that clawbacks can only go back 2 years, which is interesting because the decision when it came to protecting SIPC was that SIPC didn't have to pay out its $500,000 based on clawbacks of 6 years. So we see a remarkable multiple personality disorder protecting people who took big money out. And if you look at what the 2-year period protects, it protects, you know, 2 years takes us back to December 2006. Madoff went down in December 2008. It takes us back to December 2006 when Goldman Sachs started its big mortgage short. So you get the distinct feeling that all the people in the know got their money out in October, November after decisions had been made. Then the big short goes in and they've got the 2-year period. And then Madoff goes down 2 years later. It all looks very convenient. Online shopping is being pushed incredibly. I've been on Coast to Coast a couple times, and every time I'm on Coast to Coast, you're just saying, oh, online shopping is going boomerang. It's really not. If you look at online shopping as of the end of the first quarter, I don't have the statistics yet for the end of the year, 6% of shopping is done online, 13% of discretionary. It's not as high as everybody's making it out to sound. There's no doubt, though, that it's extremely important in rural areas. I'm in a rural area, and I depend on online shopping more than I would like to. It's certainly important in certain discretionary areas like media or sports. Where it is very important and where small businesses are really losing is we see consumers want to interact with both physical space and online space together. So one of the most successful retail establishments in North America with mobile payments and mobile phone information access is Starbucks. But more and more we're using our mobile phones when we go into a store to check information or to comparison shop. And so it's not either or, it's and. One of the things that's coming is there's very little online shopping in the big essential areas, including food and groceries. But obviously we're seeing shifts by the stores like Amazon and then the post office to be able to deliver groceries and food. And so once those start to shift, we're going to see a real acceleration. I put up a little study that was done and a little graphic. It says if you shop at Amazon, you support I forget what it is. Buying at Amazon supports 10 employees, and I forget how much the money was. And buying in the store supports 57 employees. So there's a big difference. If we swing our money out of buying in the physical store into buying online, we're going to significantly reduce the employment in the retail area. I did a book review of a very interesting book, 3 Felonies a Day, by a very experienced attorney about the debasement of the legal system in the United States. It's very chilling to understand what's going on, and it's a pretty dense topic, so I decided to write a in-depth, detailed summary of sort of the key issues, and you'll see why people are so nervous about dealing with the legal system, and very rightly so, because it's what's been happening is a serious debasement of the enforcement of the law. Anyway, it's up on the blog under book review, 3 Felonies a Day. Another commentary I wrote this week was on China equities taking off. And thanks to China equities taking off, Jack Ma has become the richest person in Asia, although he did float on the U.S. markets. He's the 50-year-old founder of Alibaba, and his fortune has now risen to $28.6 billion, surpassing the Hong Kong property magnate who'd held the title of number one. Of course, that's based on public statistics, based on real wealth. Who knows? The Wall Street Journal had a big CEO conference and published their priorities, sort of what the CEOs said was their top 5 priorities. And I thought they were pretty interesting because they augur some of the changes that are coming up. One of the things they keep pushing for is great liberalization of immigration and residency status for people who go to university here from other countries. And they described it as 21st century workforce. I expect to see real progress on that by at least by after the election, if not before. They also talked a lot about investment in infrastructure. That's a drumbeat you're hearing all around the world. And as monetary stimulus ends, I would expect that to be the sort of the next step, which is fiscal stimulus. And it's one that I generally support because we really do need to make an investment in infrastructure, and new technology means we can really re-engineer sort of how we use technology. They're promoting to a tapering of capital gains. The longer you hold shares, the less your capital gain stock would be. I think that'd be a terrific thing to do. And again, it's all in alignment with building equity markets. Finally, and this one had me laughing until I was under the table, empower healthcare consumers. Now that we have rigged through Washington the forcing of all consumers to buy very expensive corporate healthcare insurance, they're saying, oh, we want consumers to take better care of themselves, so they need less from the healthcare system. Oh, the hypocrisy. So I just had to take the time to sit down and write a little commentary that we'll publish sometime tomorrow. And here's, I want to read it to you. I don't understand why the media keeps saying that Obamacare is not working and has not been good for the Democrats. Obamacare was signed into law on March 23, 2010, and affirmed by the Supreme Court on June 28, 2012. Between March 22, 2010, so the day before it passed, and June 27, 2012, so the day before it was sort of affirmed by the Supreme Court, the following healthcare ETFs rose by the following percentages. So during this period, the S&P 500 went up 14.2%. The healthcare select spider went up 15.5%. iShares U.S. medical devices went up 41%. iShares U.S. healthcare providers went up 20%. iShares U.S. pharmaceuticals went up 10%. iShares NASDAQ biotech 40%. Then from June 27th, the day before 2012, the day before the Supreme Court decides, to today, at the close of the market, these same healthcare ETFs rose by the following percentages compared to the S&P, which rose 53%. Healthcare Select was up 87%. iShares U.S. Medical Devices, 76%. Healthcare Providers, 79%. Pharmaceuticals, 79%. NASDAQ Biotech, IBB, 145%. Okay, so... So then I continue the commentary. Since the single largest source of capital campaign contributions is capital gains, it looks to me like the Democrats should be in fine shape, and it is easy to see why the Republican House members who tried to stop Obamacare got their heads handed to them. So there's no doubt the two best performing areas in the stock market over the last 2 years have been healthcare and technology. Thank you, Obamacare. Market roundup, the TLT, the 20-year Treasury ETF, is now up 22.4% for the year. Ladies and gentlemen, if you had told me at the beginning of the year that TLT was going to be up 22% for the year, I could say anything could happen, but I thought the chances of that was remote. So S&P's up 10%, corporate bond aggregate ETF 3.6%. Gold's now affirmed up a little bit. Franklin and I had a great conversation about what's been going on in precious metals. I encourage you to listen to it. Gold up 1.4% for the year. Emerging markets down 6.75%. Oil down 39%. So, and that's a fall just since the summer. So that's a real, it was up as of the summer. So that's a big, big fall. If the Feds yank that interest rate leash that I talked about at the beginning, TLT and S&P could be the star performers again next year. It's quite remarkable. So, you know, we'll be talking a lot more about that at the wrap-up. But as I said in my commentary, keep an eye on the U.S. dollar index. It's the variable to watch. And if anything, interest rates, if the Feds raise interest rates, it could push that higher. Our hero this week is Russian billionaire Alisher Yuzumov. I'm not sure I'm pronouncing that right, Yuzmaninov. He is supposed to be the richest man in Russia. He resides in London. James Watson was auctioning off his Nobel Prize so he could give the money to charity. And he decided he would bid at Christie's. He bought it for $4.1 million. And announced, and then with the commission, it was 4.76. He basically paid $5 million for it and announced that he's giving it back to Watson, and so Watson will have the money to give to charity, but he will also have his prize back. I thought that was a pretty tasteful thing to do. Ask Catherine a couple good questions. It becomes very obvious to me that Facebook and LinkedIn are accessing my computer's hard drive. They suggest that I connect with people who aren't connected with anyone else in their network on their services, but those people's names and email addresses reside in my contact management software on the hard drive. It is pretty safe to say that the computer firewall services are allowing services like these to bypass the security system we believe we're entitled to. I'm going to check on LinkedIn. I don't know about that. I've just started to use it again. I don't use Facebook. I do know that Facebook's terms and conditions allow them to access, if you use them on your mobile phone, everything on your phone, including your camera and your microphone, so they can listen to you, they can watch you, they can, you know, it's basically open access. But I thank you for asking that, and I'll check on LinkedIn. When we hear things like the Federal Reserve is backing off of its quantitative easing program, how do we know this is true? Can't they just be making this stuff up along with providing any appropriate documentation to get us to believe what they want us to? I do think they're backing off of the quantitative easing program because I think they're going into engineering this bear trap that I've been describing. And again, I'll talk about it more during the wrap-up. But so I believe that's sincere. There are many different things that the Federal Reserve and the group that owns and manages the Federal Reserve can do to continue to do sort of monetary easing behind the scenes. There are many different ways they can do it. So they can encourage a flotilla of hedge funds to borrow money and proceed to do things based on sort of an inside information. So I do think they're backing off on quantitative easing. I think the fraud's pretty much cleaned up and dealt with or under management, and they're ready to kind of pull the rug and assert dollar supremacy in a lot of different ways. It's a sort of a game of financial hardball, and I do think it's coming. Let's go to the movies. Fascinating movie this week. I really want our subscribers to understand the process involved in the rebalancing of the global economy. And there's nothing like looking at that rebalancing through the lens of one product or market. And there's an Australian documentary called Red Obsession about the price bubble in Bordeaux wines that occurred between 2008 and 2010, resulting from absolutely unprecedented Chinese demand. And if you haven't had time to travel in China recently, it just gives you a marvelous feel for sort of some of the things going on over there. It's narrated by Russell Crowe, and I'm someone who has a great affection for the Bordeaux wines and the Bordeaux region. So, you know, you kind of tour Bordeaux and then you see the you visit China, you go back and forth between France and China, and it's quite fascinating. And you really see many of the issues of the rise of Asia and what it means here in the West. So I encourage you to watch that. It's very, very well done, very interesting, and certainly very entertaining. The interview this week is with Franklin. We covered precious metals. We also covered the rebalancing of the global economy because the U.S. dollar index and gold, the price of gold, are right at the very heart of it. I had asked Franklin if he would help me walk through the different very unlikely scenarios or even what I call adult fairy tales that are being promoted by a variety of different people, and we go through them together and have a good laugh. We also talked a little bit about health because Franklin and I are known to swap health scenarios. So this one was a long one, but it was fascinating, and I always love talking with Franklin about these issues because he's very grounded. He's got his firm When you're a farmer, you got your feet firmly planted in the real world. So that's it for this week. Coming up, wonderful, wonderful radio show host, one of my favorite independent producers, someone I admire tremendously, Junius Ricardo Stanton. He's from Philly, too. We're both Philly kids, about the same generation. And Junius is somebody who's taken an interest in learning the entire global economy and his neighborhood. He was a councilman in his town in New Jersey, and he studied urban planning at the University of Pennsylvania. We both went to Penn. Anyway, I asked him, I got very frustrated with the divide and conquer over the Ebola shriek-o-meter and then Ferguson, and I invited Junius to join me, and we're going to record and then use the recording for both his show and my show. And so that's going to be very interesting, and I had a talk with him this week because I said, Junius, you know, I really want to get raw and uncut. So we're going to talk about, you know, who makes money on racism and how that all works, as well as there are two divide and conquers. I think we just, if we could miraculously find a way around them, we could really unleash incredible energy. One is men versus women, and the other is black versus white. So we're going to have one African American and one Caucasian and one man and one female, and we'll talk about unpacking divide and conquer. Then week of December 25th and on January 1st, we're off both days for the holiday. Look for very special Christmas music each weekend this month. And of course, as we do every year, we're going to publish In Hoc Domini on Christmas week. Check that out on the blog. That is my favorite editorial ever written by Vermont Royster I believe he published it in 1949. Every year the Wall Street Journal republishes it, and since we've had the Saleri Report, every year I republish it. Then January 8th, the annual wrap-up, we started working on that in November. It's going to be great. If there are things you want us to address or questions, please let us know. That's a big one, and the whole team's been working on it. We're very excited about it. So until next week with Junius Ricardo Stanton, December 18th, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.